There's a moment every so often when I'm sitting in a dark studio late at night, and the on-air light is the only glow, the hum of equipment filling those spaces between breaths. I really start thinking about everything that we've learned, everything I've heard in 20 years of doing this. And in those moments, I remember the question that people always ask me over and over. Dave, why do you believe? Why do I believe the stories? Why do I believe the trembling voices of experiencers? Why do I listen when abductees whisper the things into my ear that they've never told another soul? Why, after all the noise, the hoaxes, the headlines, why do I still stand back in awe of the UFO and UAP phenomena? Well, tonight I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to do it with charts and not with bullet points, but through the stories themselves, the ones that have left an imprint, the ones that continue to linger, the ones that make disbelief feel like the least reasonable option left in the room. So let's talk about that here, right now, tonight, together, on your home for everything strange and unusual. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the Paranormal 360. There's a thread that runs through this subject. It's thin, stubborn, and it's almost invisible unless you know how to trace it with your fingertips. And it begins in the skies, where so many impossible things first reveal themselves. I once spoke with a Navy pilot who had logged more hours in the air than most of us have spent behind the wheel of a car. A man made of discipline, training, and the unshakable confidence that comes from understanding how machines obey physics. But the day he chased that tic-tac over the Pacific, physics seemed to show up late for work that day. He said the ocean looked like a sheet of hammered glass that afternoon. It was bright and reflective, calm, and then suddenly not calm at all. A patch of water roiled like something enormous was right beneath the surface, pushing at the world from below. And hovering above it, something white, oblong, fast enough to outrun thought, and yet still enough to unsettle the soul. When he banked his jet, the object matched him, not perfectly, but with intention, the way a curious animal might circle a diver in its reef. He told me the moment stretched thin, a wordless, breathless recognition that he wasn't chasing a machine. He was interacting with a presence, something aware, something that appeared to be evaluating him the same way he was attempting to evaluate it. And then it left, not by flying, not by accelerating, but by simply just disappearing into a new position 50 miles away. It was as if distance meant nothing. And that's where the thread tonight begins, not with fear, but with intelligence. Because whatever he saw that day didn't flee. It didn't hide. More importantly, it didn't threaten. It watched, it observed, and then it moved on. But the story doesn't stop in the open air. If anything, the thread pulls tighter beneath the ground. Let's now go to a missile officer from Malmstrom. He once shared a night that still makes his voice tighten when he speaks about it. Picture a cement bunker buried beneath Montana soil. Thick walls, dim lights, the quiet buzz of electronics guarding 10 nuclear missiles poised to defend a nation. And then, one by one, those missiles blinked offline. Not damaged, not sabotaged. They just went dormant as though someone had placed a quiet finger on their triggers and held them calm. Moments later, a call came from above. Security personnel whispering, terrified about a glowing object hovering above the silo. Silent, yet controlled, purposeful, like the tic-tac, but here on land, peering down at humanity's most destructive inventions with what felt eerily like disapproval. And when that object drifted away into the darkness, the missiles awoke again. Systems normal, power restored, no explanation, nothing that the engineers could explain. And I asked that officer what he thought the message was, and he didn't even pause. He said, "We weren't the ones in control, not that night." The sky shows curiosity. The silos show capability, but the ocean, that's where the phenomenon becomes something older, something almost primal. I spoke to a sonar tech, a soft-spoken man who had trusted his ears more than his eyes, and he spent nights listening to the ocean the way a doctor listens to a heartbeat. And he could tell you the difference between a submarine prop and a pod of whales half a world away. But he couldn't explain the night the ocean swallowed a star. His screen lit up with a sound so clean it made his scalp prickle. A tone descending from above the surface, not splashing, not impacting, just entering the water like it belonged there. And it moved too fast for anything human, too steadily for anything natural. And it cut through the depths like a blade sliding into silk. He increased sensitivity, trying to force the ocean to give up a clue, but the object left no turbulence, no cavitation, no signature of resistance, as though water wasn't water to it at all, as though it navigated a hidden world beneath ours and had for millennia. He watched it move horizontally at a speed no torpedo could survive, and then simply disappear into pressure zones that would collapse any submarine that's ever been built. He said it was like watching something return home. And just like that, the thread that started in the sky had now woven through the sea, binding the two in an impossible way. But the next chapter, that one doesn't take place in the skies or oceans or missile fields. It takes place in a small Brazilian town where the phenomenon stopped being distant and became heartbreakingly close. I hope you're getting a little insight into tonight's discussion, that there are greater things going on in the world around us, being witnessed and seen by people with very high clearance and very good understanding of science and technology, of physics, understanding the way the world should work with the knowledge that we currently have. People that are left astounded at just how unprepared we really seem to be to grasp the possibilities and the nature of things that exist and may have always existed around us. Sometimes, if we're lucky enough and we're paying attention, they reveal themselves to us in some of the most astonishing ways, ways that will leave deep impacts on their minds, their hearts, and in some instances, their souls, making them question everything they ever thought they believed or knew. That's why I believe stories like these, and we have many more to cover. Stay tuned. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the Paranormal 360. Still not convinced, my darklings? I completely understand. But let's continue, shall we? Next, we're off to Virginia. It's 1996, a humid afternoon, heavy with quiet. Three girls taking a shortcut behind a cinder block wall spotted something crouched in the dirt. Not a monster, not a threat, something small, something trembling, something that appeared hurt. Its skin glistened like it was feverish. Its eyes were wide, almost liquid, too large for its skull. It tried to shrink away from them, not in aggression, but in fear. Witnesses later described the same creature, long limbs, an oily-based skin, a smell like ammonia and dirt. soldiers were called, and the creature was captured, still trembling, still alive. But the man who carried it would die weeks later from an infection that no doctor could catalog. And the creature? People say it whimpered, that it sounded lost and afraid. Now, it's easy to dismiss lights in the sky, but it's harder to dismiss systems shutting down without cause, harder still to dismiss objects slicing through ocean pressure like it's thin air. But it's nearly impossible to dismiss a living being crouched behind a wall, frightened, alone, and undeniably real. And if that doesn't bind the thread for you, there are many more knots that come from people who are never supposed to speak. And over the last decade, insiders, pilots, intelligence officers, aerospace analysts have stepped forward one by one, quietly at first, then with growing urgency, not claiming fantasies, not claiming invasion, but revealing the simple truths as they knew them. There are materials we cannot replicate, craft that we cannot reverse engineer, incidents that we can't explain, encounters like the one I just described that we cannot ignore, and a presence that didn't arrive recently, but seems to have been here longer than our programs, longer than our myths, maybe even longer than our civilizations. But they don't speak of monsters or conquerors, or for that matter, saviors. But they do speak of intelligence, of patience and observation, of something moving alongside us with quiet, deliberate purpose. Now, Colonel Charles Halt was reported as talking about his Rendlesham Forest experience with a silence that almost felt staged, like something was listening and waiting, taking notes on how he was going to deal with what occurred that night. The night he walked into that forest, the air carried the metallic scent of winter and the strange crackle of static that makes hair rise on your arms long before the mind understands why. He followed the luminous streaks of light slipping beneath and between the trees and leaves. Not beams and not searchlights, but shapes. Shapes that moved with intention, dipping between the trunks as if they were studying the men, following them, not evading them. When Colonel Halt reached the clearing, that's when he saw it. There was a triangular craft that was metallic, yet it seemed alive, with an interior glow, and it was sitting just above the forest floor, like it refused to touch the soil. Its surface shimmered in a way that felt alive, like a creature flexing muscle beneath the skin. It pulsed once, and then a kind of soft thrum that moved through his bones. Colonel Halt raised his recorder. His voice, steady, trained, quivered on the edges. Then the light shot upward, disappearing between the stars without sound, without trail, without even disturbing the branches above it. But believe it or not, that wasn't even the strange part. The strange part was how the forest reacted afterward. The trees leaning as though bending toward the spot where the craft had been, as if nature itself had witnessed something sacred. Halt said Rendlesham didn't feel haunted, but it definitely felt inhabited by something that returned long before his boots touched the soil and returned long after he left. Probably one of the most impactful stories that I've covered over the years takes us to Zimbabwe. Not in the 1800s, not in 1921. This was just about 30 years ago in 1994. The air was hot enough to shimmer above the ground, turning the schoolyard into a wavering mirage. More than 60 children stood frozen, their eyes fixed on a figure emerging from a silvery disc that sat just beyond the tree line. One child, a girl named Emma, said the being moved like it was weightless. It was gliding rather than stepping. Its body was slim and dark, and its eyes impossibly large. She said it wasn't the appearance that frightened her. It was the flood of emotion she felt when their eyes met. It wasn't speaking. She whispered that years later. It was showing. Every child there described the same thing. Images in their minds, warning scenes of the earth gasping under the strain of human hands. A message, but not delivered in words. It was delivered in a way children understood instinctively. One boy said it felt like he was being downloaded. The craft lifted silently, the figure rejoining it with the grace of something that had mastered gravity long before humans shaped language. In moments, the clearing was empty again. And what lingers about the aerial school encounter isn't just the sighting. It's the unity and totality of the memory. Children don't conspire, trust me. I've got 11 of them. And it's rare that any three of them will agree on any one given thing at any point. But to get everybody on board with one story where no one changes, nobody wavers, nobody decides to come clean. They don't craft shared hallucinations. Children just tell you what they saw. And what they saw was not from here. Could you imagine that? Being in school, out on the playground, having a day like any other, when suddenly your paradigm and understanding of reality is shattered in a way that may never make sense to you. And it isn't something that you see and you're alone to witness by yourself, but along with 59 of your classmates and teachers inside the building. It was enough to bring in military presence and a full investigation. It's things like that that continue to wind our imagination, that force us to keep our eyes to the skies, to listen to these stories and these examples of experiences from people not just in one area, not just your hillbilly cousins deep in the woods of West Virginia, but people from every walk of life, every religious background and belief system, every race, creed, and color. And oh, we're just getting started. We've got more to share right here on the Paranormal 360. Welcome back, my darklings. Tonight, we're discussing UFO and UAPs and why I believe that we are not alone. What are the stories that over 20 years of reporting have stuck out the most to me that make me stand back and say, I believe this. I believe this to be true, and I believe that there is something bigger and on a grander scale taking place around us. For our next story, we're going to go to the heart of our country, Washington, D.C. It's a humid July night, heavy with expectation. Air traffic controllers watched in disbelief as blips flickered onto their radar. Objects darting across restricted airspace over the White House and Capitol like sparks skating over dark water. You heard that right. I've heard many of you say, Dave, if these craft and these beings exist, why don't they just show up at the White House? Well, they have, my friends, and it is one of the best and most compelling stories you deserve to know more about. So I will give you a taste and a flavor of many of these tales tonight, but I encourage you, dig deep, dig far, because your world is about to change. If you peel back the layers of garbage that have been piled upon you and the limitations put on you by others and allow yourself to think, breathe, and examine for yourself, to hear from the experts and the lay people that have had these experiences, you'll see what I'm talking about. That night, jets were scrambled, roaring into the sky with engines blazing. But each time they approached the unknown objects, they simply vanished. They didn't fade. They vanished. Then they reappeared behind the jets, Like they were stalking them with movements no aircraft known to man could replicate. One of the controllers later said that it felt like they were simply toying with us. Outside, thousands of people. Did you hear me? Thousands of people witnessed lights performing impossible maneuvers above the National Mall. Newspapers called it the invasion that never happened. But behind closed doors, officials quietly admitted they had no explanation. The Capitol had been breached by something that didn't negotiate altitude or speed. It negotiated intention. And that intention was focused squarely on us, allowing us to see them. For our next story, I'll take you out on a lonely stretch of highway, Highway 70 in New Mexico, where the night feels almost too wide, where the stars seem to lean in a little closer as though curious about the travelers below. There was a trucker named Raymond that drove that route for 30 years without incident. And one night, as he crested a hill outside Oregon, the sky opened with a flash of turquoise light. His truck, it sputtered. The dashboard began flickering, his CB radio crackling with a voice that wasn't static, but it also wasn't altogether human. Ahead, a figure stood on the road. It was luminous, impossibly tall, its limbs reflecting light like polished ceramic. He swerved, heart hammering, only to find the figure now beside his cab window, keeping perfect pace at 60 miles per hour. Raymond, he didn't scream. He didn't brake. He just stared at the visitor. The figure turned its head slowly, and he felt a cold wave of recognition as if he knew him. Not personally, but another form of connection. And as fast as he saw this, it vanished, a smear of light that streaked vertically into the stars. And when the truck sputtered back to life, Raymond pulled to the shoulder and he just began sobbing. Not because he was afraid, but because he no longer felt alone on those long, empty roads. And a little spark of magic revealed itself to him. Something had been waiting out there. Something was watching. And on that night, it finally stepped close enough to look back into the cab of a truck. Now let's jump to 1955, rural Kentucky. Two families sat inside a tiny farmhouse while creatures, yeah, you heard me, creatures circled their property. Their luminous eyes peering through windows, their small hands gripping the edge of the roof. And the witnesses, they weren't mystics. They were hardworking folks who believed in two things, their land and their guns. And yet every shot that they fired at the creatures had absolutely no effect. Didn't cause fear. It didn't cause retreat. Hell, it didn't even impact. The beings floated down from the rooftop like feathers slipping from a bird's wing. Their movement was slow and deliberate, almost mockingly calm. One woman recalled the moment one creature pressed its claws against the window, its face inches from hers. But as terrifying as it might sound to you and I, she didn't describe malice. She described a face staring at her, showing curiosity. After hours of this siege, the family fled to the police station, shaking and pale, and officers later found claw marks, footprints, and a strange metallic residue around the house. Again, this wasn't imagination. This wasn't hysteria. This was an encounter with something small, something strange, and something utterly unafraid of us. Let's go visit our friends to the north as we head off to Nova Scotia. in 1967, the year of my birth. A quiet fishing village where the ocean carries stories far inland is the beginning of our story. It was there that witnesses saw a glowing object plummet toward the harbor, trailing yellow light as it descended. The people there, they braced for an explosion, but instead heard a soft hissing as if something massive had slipped beneath the waves. Fishermen rushed to the water expecting debris or bodies. Instead, they found a bright oval glow drifting just under the surface. It was as if it was alive. It was pulsing like a heartbeat and moving with an eerie intention. For days, the Navy scoured that area. Divers, they went deep. They returned pale and shaken because they returned to say, there's something down there, and it's big. One diver years later confessed he saw not one craft, but two, moving beneath the water like they were communicating silently, coordinating a retreat into deeper, darker places where no human machine dared follow. Shag Harbor wasn't a crash. It seemed a clandestine rendezvous. At a moment in time when the strange and the real world collide, when people from many walks of life, many different belief systems, once again shared a very strange experience that left the government and the military stymied. They had no answers. They had no idea of what they were encountering or what just took place in their small town, but it would forever put them on the map. We have more stories to share, and we'll do that next right here on the Paranormal 360. Our next story from March 13th, 1997. Phoenix, Arizona was not prepared for what drifted over it that night. People first saw the lights over Henderson, Nevada, a quiet formation moving silently, heading southeast. Witnesses described it not as separate lights, but as something connected, like a massive black triangle that actually blotted out the stars. As the craft entered Arizona airspace, entire neighborhoods stepped outside, drawn by the strange, deliberate motion overhead. Streets fell silent. Cars pulled over to the shoulder. Parents lifted children onto their shoulders so that they could see it too. One of the fascinating little tidbits of this story is a citizen pilot was the first to call in this eyewitness account. And that citizen pilot was the actor Kurt Russell, believe it or not. Now, as the craft entered the Arizona airspace, some described it as large as the size of a football field. Others swore it stretched almost a mile across. But the one thing they could all agree upon was that it moved with grace of something not burdened by propulsion as we currently understand it. And there was no engine noise, no vibration, no sonic booms, just a gliding, impossibly large object drifting low enough that witnesses could see the shape, not imagined, not guessed, but outlined by the city lights below. Police operators received so many calls, they stopped logging them. And then the craft reached the edge of the city, paused, as if considering something, and then it silently ascended until it vanished into the desert night. To this day, thousands of witnesses stand by what they saw. Whatever passed through Phoenix wasn't just one person's hallucination. It was a collective encounter so massive with something so enormous, coordinated, and yet wholly unexplained. Now, few UFO encounters are as methodically recorded as Japan Airlines Flight 1628, a cargo flight over Alaska. Three experienced crew members saw a pair of glowing objects maneuvering above and around their plane. These weren't just distant lights or ambiguous flashes. The crew described them as structured craft, metallic, with what looked like rings or exhaust ports, I guess, emitting a warm amber light. The smaller objects approached the cockpit windows close enough that the pilots felt the heat from their illumination. This happened for several minutes. The craft paced the airliner, shifting position with smooth, intentional movement. Then came the large one, a massive, silent object, estimated by the captain to be the size of two aircraft carriers. They appeared behind them on radar. FAA controllers saw it. NORAD tracked it. The plane's crew watched it pace them for nearly 400 miles. When the pilots tried to turn, the craft mirrored them. When they descended, it descended. And when they banked, it followed, always just far enough away to remain visible, but always close enough to make its presence undeniable. When the craft finally vanished, radar confirmed that the crew already knew. They had been followed by something enormous, intelligent, and most importantly, completely impossible to explain. Three pilots witnessed it. Two radar stations confirmed it. This is, in history, one of the most credible commercial flight cases that's ever been recorded. Next, we're going to go to Stephenville. It's a quiet ranching town in Texas. It's the kind of place where folks tell the truth plainly because that's what they were raised to do. And on January 8th of 2008, dozens of residents reported a massive object moving silently across the sky. Ranchers, business owners, police officers, pilots, all describing the same thing. A huge craft, brighter at its edges, glowing, gliding low and slow, then suddenly accelerating with a speed no aircraft in this world could match. One witness, a pilot and former Air Force officer, described the craft as at least a mile long. Others saw jets scrambling after it, jets that, according to military logs, were never actually in the air. Their radar returns told a story even stranger. The object flew toward restricted airspace over President Bush's ranch, reaching speeds recorded at over 2,000 miles per hour, all without creating a sonic boom. Fighter jets were indeed airborne that night. FAA radar confirmed the unknown object, and residents saw the chase with their own eyes. This wasn't a mistaken planet. It wasn't flares or a misidentified aircraft. It was a coordinated event observed from the ground, from radar, a craft moving with intention, silent power, and abilities humans simply do not possess. Now, when you stand back and look at all of this, Phoenix, Japanese Flight 1628, Stephenville, every story we've explored tonight, you start to see the outline of something far bigger than isolated incidents. You see the pattern of presence, a presence that reveals itself the same way a tide reveals the coastline, quietly, repeatedly, and with a force that reshapes everything you thought you knew. These aren't one-off sightings. They aren't misidentified planes, planets, or flares. They're coordinated events witnessed by pilots, radar operators, school children, military personnel, ranchers, fishermen, entire cities. People who didn't know each other, people who didn't compare notes, people who had nothing to gain by stepping forward and everything to lose. And yet their stories align. Their memories synchronize. Their encounters map onto one another like a precision that makes coincidence the least believable option. And that's why after all these years, all the interviews, all the late nights in the studio with that red on-air light burning in the dark, I believe. Because the phenomena isn't subtle anymore. It's consistent, intelligent, and at times breathtaking. So whatever is out there in our skies, in our oceans, in our fields, forests, and deserts has been with us far longer than we've been willing to admit. And tonight, maybe we stepped one inch closer to understanding that presence, or maybe it stepped one inch closer to understanding us. Either way, the story isn't finished, not by a long shot. We'll be back with more right here on the Paranormal 360.